Blog Talk Radio.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our February the 22nd show, 2014. Just dawned on me, I've been doing these shows since November of 2008. So that's kind of interesting that we've been around this long. But we couldn't do it alone, and we have to give credit where credit is due to my friends, my rock historians, the dear friends of John Talk Radio, John and David Timmons. Thanks for joining the show tonight, guys. Thanks for being a part of the show for these years.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing really good.
After I listened to that song, I was looking at my lava lamp, so I was really enjoying that song.
Yep. And you probably could sell that and retire if you got an
original.
Yeah.
And, John, I want to say congratulations. I didn't realize it's been over 5 years you've been having the show now.
Yeah. And sometimes I just kind of forget about that, and I go back and look at the I started it in November of 2008, and it's just been a lot of fun. And so I want to thank you guys for, you know, supporting it and telling people.
Oh, it's always fun to be on with you, John. We enjoy it very much. It's like I said, every time we have a chance to be on here, it's really great, really great.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And we got a great show lined up tonight. This is John and David Timmons, The Roots and Branches of the Rock and Roll Family Tree. This is going to be the part one of a series. And I guess tonight, guys, we're going to go out on a limb, aren't we?
Definitely.
Good one, John. Good one.
Yeah. Hey, I
good one there.
I want a drum roll on that one. But,
Boom, boom.
We're going out on a limb tonight with the Timmons brothers. And also, before we get into the we jump out on the limb, I just want to say that I have a trifecta of Timmons Brothers, Stump the Timmons Brothers questions, three, and they go from the level of difficulty increases, guys, with each one. So we'll do one in about, This is like a game show now.
Yeah, John almost sounds like one of
he's
the stars, rock and roll trivia games.
Yeah.
I can't compete with you guys, but this is Stump the Timmons Brothers, level 1, 2, and 3 tonight. Yeah, I'm inspired by you guys, so I'm trying. I don't have the real cool boards or anything yet, but I'm still just sitting here looking at my piece of paper. But we'll work on that. We'll have that. We'll have level 1, 2, and 3 tonight, and that'll be interesting. But guys, let's talk about this. As we, have had the different shows and we've talked about different, bands, and we've gotten into different types of music. We've gotten into the revolution, the rock revolution, the drug scenes, all the different things that have happened in the 60s and 70s with rock and roll. And I think one of the interesting things is that how that a lot of these acts are related and have connections with each other. And when you start looking at one, you look at another, you look at this one's connected to that one. That's what's so intriguing about it. And I think that's what's intriguing to me about this series we're going to do on the roots and branches of rock and roll.
Well, you just played John. Like the Buffalo Springfield, and like John and I said, that the off branch is that, and I'll let Brother John here take it from there.
Well, the family branch, once you start thinking about it in preparing for this show, it became almost overwhelming for both when it was Dave and I trying to plan for this. We's like, well, we could touch on this act, and we could touch on this act, because just looking at Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young alone and the number of acts that they touched or influenced directly is quite a family branch. And then looking at the other side, the roots of a band and where each of them came from, it's just that one group into itself. It's amazing the influences and how they were in each other's bands, particularly CSNY, with all the various combinations over the years, from being sometimes Neil Young by himself, sometimes Nash with Crosby, sometimes Stills with Young, and so on. And we had to really just decide that it was from our conversations with you that this needs to be a series. There's just so many other artists that we could touch on tonight that are in somewhat related either to a Buffalo Springfield or to a Hollies or to a Byrds, and then give that hybrid of CSNY and where it went from there.
Exactly, and then even to take that farther, the bands that are influenced by them today, which would be an amazing amount, like you look at country rock, you look at what they call the jangly rock with a jangly guitar. I mean, that all started from there. And you look at I was talking to somebody the other day, guys, on a show about, voices and how that Neil Young wasn't always, the record companies didn't always like him because of his voice. They didn't think he fit in.
It's amazing about Neil Young, though. Pearl Jam worships Neil Young because Neil Young even played with them and recorded with them. And we talked about influences and how Pearl Jam and Eddie Vedder heavily enjoys Neil Young. But you're right, a couple of the record labels on Neil Young's voice kind of frowned on it. And like I said, but his voice just stands out in rock, and his influences is amazing.
John, if I can tell a little story about Neil Young, since we just heard Mr. Soul, Buffalo Springfield there. And of course, he wrote that for the Buffalo Springfield, and he's made many variations of it over the years and made it sound entirely different, although my favorite is the one you just played, the actual original. But first, if we kind of trace back, Crosby, Stills, and Nash had already been together a little bit, and the head guy, producer of the Atlantic record label, which Crosby, Stills, and Nash was under, didn't feel that the puzzle was complete. And Dave and I, we heard this story when Graham Nash came out with his new book this past fall. And he was telling the story himself, saying that we were just fine, the three of us, doing our harmonies, and we were really enjoying it. But here comes Altman Ertingen, who was the head of Atlantic, still is, I think, for this day.
Yep.
And he said, but you guys, you're just missing something, and you need another artist. And he happened to be an avid fan of Buffalo Springfield, was gravely disappointed when they broke up. Well, guess who he said you need to have in your group? Neil Young.
Yeah.
Put in your final piece. And of course, Stills had already worked with him, and he had, you know, some friction there. And Graham Nash tells his story that he really did not know him, had worked with him, but he said, once I met with him and we sat around for a couple hours, I realized we had a nice kind of chemistry in our music. And so that's how it ended up being a four-harmony and not a three-harmony band.
And there's two versions of the Mary Cash Express. We got one with just CSN, and then we got the other one with Neil Young. The 45 itself is without Neil Young. The LP is with Neil Young. He plays the organ on it. And so he was basically, like John said, put onto the group, but once they got his artistic talent with it and everything, and of course Graham Nash used to call him the skinny Canadian, but that kind of changed over time from being the skinny Canadian, though. But he was still Neil Young.
Well, that's a dollar. But yeah, it's interesting how maybe we could just stop for a minute and take a look at maybe how many bands have had that opportunity before. I mean, you've got CS and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, which very popular, commercial, and sometimes you don't always get that. You get very good musicians that do great work, but they aren't always commercial. They don't translate into money. The record companies aren't happy with them. So the record company's saying, can you imagine the conversation, guys, the president of the record company's having with these guys? You aren't quite where you need to be. And
ain't that amazing, all these stars?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's got to be – I would love to be in a time machine to go back to that one and watch their face going, what?
In Graham Nash's book, John, he explains when they all got together, he said there was always some artistically differences, which there would be. You get four different talents. He said that's what made them so good, though. He said that each one had their own ideas, and sometimes that can be good or bad, but he said every time they get in the studio, he said they know what direction they want to do and the direction they'd want to be, and he said occasionally there'd be conflict, he said, because what one would like, maybe two others wouldn't. So you get major stars like that, and we don't realize how difficult that'd be, because most bands have one songwriter in it. But here you've got four songwriters of all unique talent.
Right, and you look at Graham Nash, and he's – I don't know if you heard this show that he hosts on iHeartRadio. He does a classic rock show on there.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. I can send you the title of it. It's
– Yeah.
You know, it's free, and you can get on and listen to it. And it's an oldies classic show. And he talks about his book, and he mentions stories, and he goes through and talks about times, you know, he had with this one and had with that one, and talked about the time McCartney called him and said, hey, come over to the studio, and, you know, and just things like that that you and I would just be completely blown away by. And it's just kind of the way his life was. It was, you know, that's his life. And when you talk about a family tree or a family reunion, this is what these guys had, you know. It's like we could go to our family reunions and think, man, where did these people come from?
Yeah, I'll tell the key thing about Graham Nash, too, on February 2nd of 68, the Hollies were playing the Whiskey a Go-Go. That would be the first time Stephen Stills and David Crosby see the Hollies. The Hollies were playing there. And they were amazed by his harmonies, and they were kicked in with hearing this. And I think, and Graham at that time was getting a little bit of disillusion with the Hollies anyway, because he had originally wrote Mary Cash Express for the Hollies. And the Hollies turned him down on it, and I think that had a lot to do with him joining up with Crosby's and Stills.
Well, that happened a lot. I think it was that old, let's stay on the wagon, guys. Just don't do anything different. You know, it's working.
Yes.
We're making money. Why do you want to change? Why do you want to grow long hair and do that? Why do you want to do this? Like the Beach Boys. Why do we want to be psychedelic? We're selling records. We're singing about girls and cars. So that's an interesting point. So where do you think, okay, so we're going up the family tree. Now we've got this band, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and they branch out a little bit, and they bring in Neil Young. Now, what do you think we talked about his songwriting skills. How do you think that complemented? Because when you listen to their music, it gives you kind of a down-homey sound. It's kind of folk rock. It's got a lot of acoustic sound to it. The harmonies are amazing. Where do you think all that came from? Where were the roots of that band?
Well, Neil Young was originally a lead singer in Canada. He had a band before that, and he was in it for a while, and they were called the Esquires. So he had experience. And I think Stephen Stills said it best about him. He said when Neil Young pisses you off, that's when he's doing his best work. and he said many a times in the Springfield he would walk out because he wasn't happy and come back in. And I think, though, with Neil Young, and I think my brother John will agree with this, he did, when you listen to his album Harvest, is one of my favorite Neil Young albums anyway, and you listen to that, he just has unique sound to him, and in the blend those harmonies, it just, like I said, Neil has his own way, and the song, I know Broken Arrow, he wrote with the Springfield, it always stood out to me like that and everything. But I'll see what brother John has to say about it.
Well, I think that I want to trace back here, John, when Crosby, Stills, and Nash first started getting together, and you were saying, like, when you'd love to have been in a room when these record producers and the execs are meeting with these three established stars. Now, I don't know the background story of this, but I have read that they had, here they are, already established, the first label they went to, and I don't know who turned them down, but they failed an audition with the Beatles Apple Records label.
Oh, no.
Isn't that amazing? And
then
I would like to explore this more and find out who was there, what was going on. I don't think it was the Beatles, but I'm like, you know, we know that Apple Company made a lot of terrible decisions, you know, I mean, in terms of business.
Oh, yeah.
So
very little good.
I just wanted to highlight that one for a moment. But then that's when Atlantic came in. And I think when Neil Young to the band, I think he gave him a little edge. I think the harmony was there. It was nice, smooth, flowing. But as Dave said, sometimes you need a little friction to bring out the best. And I think Neil Young brought that kind of chemistry. And I think that would the three have chosen him on their own? Probably no. But because somebody else was telling them this is what you need, it gave them that little edge and to let them go beyond probably what they ordinarily would have done.
Well, that's sometimes in life a good thing to get a little kick in the you-know-what, but it's also interesting to see how people react to that because sometimes you may have a sit-down, guys, with somebody and say, this is what I think is a good idea, and it could be the worst news to them and they don't accept it. But it's also kind of cool that being where they were, that they accepted it. And that probably has something to do with the fact that, you know, it was Neil Young. But how much do you think that was that they were thinking, oh, this will be a good idea, or they're thinking, well, you know, the record company's telling us what they want us to do, and maybe we better do it. And I don't know how much
That's
they needed
point.
Money back then. Yeah, you wouldn't think they'd need a whole lot of money, but who knows? I mean, a lot of those guys went through money like, you know, it was nothing. Like it was.
And the main thing about record companies, the only thing they are thinking about is making money.
Yeah,
and,
it's a business.
And I've talked to a lot of songwriters and stuff, and they said sometimes we don't get as much as what that record company wanted. And so, like I think Atlantic's idea was, if we bring in Neil Young, he said, here we got, and then instead of having three super members, we got four. That's only going to help record sales when they go into the studio. And so they're thinking of it business-wise, but they're not thinking about how the songwriters feel putting all four of these guys in the same room. But if you're a record executive, man, he said, man, all I see is dollar signs, basically.
Yeah, and why didn't the Apple executive see that? That's a good question, John Timmons, because you think that, you know, they signed you know, I was thinking of the first artist they signed. James Taylor was one of them.
Yes.
I know they signed this one really amazing soul singer. I know she was really good, but I can't remember her name, and I don't think she sold a lot of records. But that's, I mean, we could do a whole conversation wrapped around, you know, that whole thing. You know,
Badfinger was probably the only group that did sell good for Apple, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And because Badfinger was always around them as like the house bands, but no wonder Apple though turned to a sour apple. They didn't know who to sign times.
Well, they turned into apple cider. But,
and you wonder who were they auditioning for? Like who would make this decision to three established stars, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and tell them, you know, I like your music, but I don't think it's what we're looking for here at Apple. You know,
have a nice day. Yes.
You know, it was those
have a candy bar on your way out.
And you know, John, you know, we always think of people we tend to forget, and for good reason. Was the head of Decca Records in 1962 when Brian Epstein brought in his Beatles and said, I want these guys audition for your label. And he told him, well, Mr. Epstein, they sound pretty good, but guitar bands are on their way out. Good luck. I hope you find a label.
That's about as bad when Thomas Edison tried to say, looking at a light bulb and said, hello, hello, and it didn't work.
What a good idea. Just wasn't the time. That's a really good point. But it's time now for Stump the Timmons Brothers Part 1. Now, what we're going to do, we're going to play we want to get a lot of this great music in. So we did play Mr. Soul, and also we have For What It's Worth. So we're going to play For What It's Worth, then we're going to play the mystery song. And then the mystery song is what you guys listen to and tell me. All you got to do is tell me the artist. And
okay.
I'm good. I'm good with that.
John, I have a question for you. Can we get any help from our callers if we have people out there with no answer?
Yes. Lifelines?
Yeah.
You have one lifeline. That's it.
Just letting them know that, you know, we are here to hear them, too. Well, what's the number, John? Is it
877-694-5613.
Okay.
And yeah,
just in
call
case
in.
We need help.
Yeah.
It'll be good. I'm really curious. I'm really curious now. I got to hear this song.
Yeah, this will be a good one. Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth, be played first, and then we'll play the mystery song. Then we'll come back. We got a lot of good stuff, so don't go anywhere.
Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Being drawn, nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. For the heat, a thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying sign. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time.
I want to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio tonight. My special guests are John and David Timmons. We're talking about the roots and branches of the rock and roll family tree. Today we've got Buffalo Springfield, The Byrds, and Bad Company on our list. That we're out on a limb with these guys. But the question right now is, John and David Timmons, who played that song? Who's the artist?
Well, it's definitely not Razor's Edge.
No, Razor's Edge, that's true.
It's a process of elimination. This might take a while.
It was a hit, I guess.
No.
It was not a hit.
It
was
British?
Not a hit.
Is it British?
Not. Nope.
It's not
but
British.
It's not British. I'll give you hints. But it's also not from the United States of America.
Whoa.
Well, my guess was a group that I don't think would be it because you just said that they weren't British. Because
I was thinking of them. I was guess yep. Australia.
Now I want you to know that this is all connected into the family tree tonight. This all came from this. We've talked about this person several times already tonight.
Wouldn't happen to be a Canadian band?
Yeah, it could be.
Canadian band, and would they have been named the Esquires?
Nope.
Whoa,
you're close. You're really close.
I assume Neil Young was in the band.
You assume correctly.
Okay. Was it the Minor Birds?
It was. Good.
It was?
Good. It was. Hint was going to be Super Freak.
Yeah, because Rick
Minor
James
Birds.
was a young Rick James was in that band, okay?
And the Minor Birds, I believe Bruce Palmer was the bass player.
Bruce Palmer was in the Minor Birds.
Yes,
good.
Hey, here
yep.
we go. Yeah, right. Now I'm thinking, yeah, Minor Birds, yeah, Bruce Palmer is the bass player here. Yes.
That's a good one, John.
Yeah, that's a good one, John. But when I first heard that, though, I thought to myself, I said, this is going to be something else. But I caught a little accent, though, there a little bit, and I thought Canadian. And then so then we put this together, so the Minor Birds, yes. And as soon as I thought of Palmer, yeah, because they were together in that band.
Yeah.
Very good song.
Let me say why I was thinking it could have been them, because at times that lead singer reminded me of Van Morrison, the way he would say Gloria and the way he was sounding, you know, it was about that era, you know.
And John, I thought a little bit too how the guitar was coming in there for a little bit. It kind of had a little bit of Rickenbacker sound in it too.
Oh, it's definitely, 1966, right in the British invasion. It was released, but it was scrapped. So the record company said, okay, we're not going to put it out. So they did release actually, I think the Minor Birds only had a couple of songs out, and they didn't go anywhere. But they had a couple in the can. But then they did a release, and I think it was 2006, where they did some of these like underground Motown songs, and they went back to Rick James, and they found this. And I think it's an awesome song. It's just a great song.
Yeah.
Well, it was a good song, yeah.
That
was a good mystery song, John. I enjoyed that. Yeah, that was a good one.
The good news is you guys get to go to level two.
Yay!
Yeah.
And, you know, John, if I was on American Bandstand, I'd give the song a 90 because I could dance to it as well. You know,
I
thought it was good to hum along with there and my rate of record.
I think I'm going to play it on my independent showcase just because it's such a great song. And
well,
I think
it's catchy.
You know, what's cool sometimes is like there are people that are into this kind of music that are younger, and they'll hear it and they'll think, oh my God, that's awesome. Who is that? And I'll say, well, it's the Minor Birds. Never heard of them. Well, heard of Neil Young? Yeah. Heard of Rick James? Who would think those two guys would be together?
Now the other two Minor Birds I do know well of is Heckle and Jekyll, but they weren't a singing duel.
Gosh, I wish I could have got one of their songs. I bet there's something out there.
But they were singing magpies.
They were talented. I liked them. I'm glad you brought them up. They were really cool. I loved Heckle and Jekyll. And they were very
fantastic.
But weren't they British? Did they have British accents?
Yeah. Yeah, I think
that's
they
right.
Yeah, they actually were from London, But that's another story.
That's a whole other family tree, isn't it, guys?
Yes.
Let's stay on this particular branch for a while. So they could have
joined the birds, though, basically, but they didn't.
That's true. Heckle and Jekyll were birds. Yeah, the minor birds. Everything's fit together. It's always fits together on John Talk Radio. Some way, somehow, everything fits together. But, guys, let's continue on. So we've got Crosby, Stills, and Nash, which is a kind of an interesting group anyway. And then I think anything with David Crosby in it would be interesting.
You know, I was just hearing this on the news, and I don't know where I heard this, John, about Crosby, and I said this to Dave. It was reported yesterday, this is new news, that he had to go in for some kind of plugging of his valve, one of his hearts, for a surgery last weekend, and it just got reported yesterday, and he thinks he's going to be able to tour in 10 days from now and join Stills and Nash for a concert tour. So that's the latest involving David Crosby and his health issues.
They always say that, you know, you should do what you love, and the doctor will probably be able to tell him, you know, if it's the right thing to do or not. So I hope the best for the guy.
Yeah,
that would
right.
Yeah,
oh,
that,
yes,
that,
definitely.
Yeah, that would be a good concert to hear, wouldn't it? Why?
Oh,
that
definitely.
Would be awesome.
Just like I always said about David Crosby, he has always been his own man. It goes back to the days with the Birds. He never really got along with the other members as well as people think with the Birds. But one of my favorite David Crosby stories is he was working on his final sessions with them, and but nobody knew that at that time. And in David Crosby's own words, I read his book, and he's saying, "Well, they all looked at me, Roger, Chris, and Gene, and said, 'David, if you can't get off the stuff, you're out of here.' And well, next week I came in there and I didn't feel well, and they said, Roger said, 'There's the door,' and I said, 'It wasn't their fault.' So he walked out, you know, and so but he always been his own man."
That was spot on. That was a great interpretation of David Crosby. That really was, because I've heard him talk. He sounds just like that.
He does.
But he does. It's a really good one. But it's like
you would think his voice doesn't go with his singing voice. You would think it's like the voice of an animated animal in some cartoon, you know?
Well, you think he would have been singing with Dave Seville and the Chipmunks, basically, when you heard him.
Or Heckle and Jekyll.
But his voice is that way. But it's amazing. Because the only song that John and I always talked about was "Can You Only Remember My Name?" He made an album. And John and I used to have our own comedy song about it when we'd go, "What name?" Wouldn't we, John? On and on.
I mean, you know, looking back now, probably when he does sing that song, he probably does have problems with all the years of drug abuse, you know, along the way, you know.
Well, it does take its toll.
Yes. You know, with Crosby and Dave, I will open this to you, too. Do you think it was a mutual departure, or was he really probably dismissed from the band, from the Birds?
Roger McGuinn basically said this in Cream Magazine. He said it was just to the point where Roger McGuinn would not even speak to him. It was getting difficult, basically, all along. And I don't think it was all over drug use. I don't think it was all that. I think it came down to it that David Crosby just was the way he was. And once he went to England, he got hooked with what the British were doing, too. And they toured England and everything. But then again, I don't know if Chris Hillman even speaks to him this day. So it's hard to tell, you know, basically, John. But I think between the musical directions and what he wanted to do and what they wanted to do, I think it was a mutual agreement, basically.
Mm-hmm. And actually, it's an interesting thing, guys, to look at what happened after that. I mean, the Birds really didn't go anywhere a lot, I don't think. I don't know if you guys agree with me. They released some stuff. They had a few hits here and there. But David Crosby's done pretty good.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
That is true. for me on the birds, and my brother, I'll let John say this too, but to me on the birds too, after David Crosby, we have a whole, like all the birds lead ship by end of 1968, it's basically just Roger McQuinn, and because Chris Hillman and the Clarks leave, and they go out. I believe two of them went to form the Flying Burrito Brothers, or joined the Flying Burrito Brothers, and then of course Roger McQuinn would form other groups of birds. But you're right, John; they never were the musical power they was after that period.
No, I think they put out some good stuff, David. I agree with you. Their music was good. If you go back and listen to some of the albums, they're very good. But I don't think they had any kind of material connection. They didn't make money. They weren't like, at that point, you know, hit records. And, and I think that eventually they had to go their own way. I know McGuinn is still – he's still out there, I think, playing.
And Chris Hillman is still very active, too. And I'll tell you one song I really like, though, and it's really a great song. This is after the original Birds left. I always loved the song Chestnut Mare and also Jesus Is Just All Right By Me. They both very catchy songs, which was made basically after what I call the original five. This was with the second group of Birds, and they're both catchy tunes. I like them.
The second flock of birds?
Yes,
ooh,
yes, the second
ooh.
Flock. You'd have, and that one you had,
good.
Clarence White would become a big important part of that, but that's another show when we go into the second flock of birds, not to get mixed up with Heckle and Jekyll, though.
Or the flock of seagulls. We can't confuse
exactly.
them.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Because yeah. they had
John,
a song. Yeah.
And preparing for this show, you know, we wanted to do a song for the background Crosby, being the birds, and it was really hard-pressed to find one that, because even though Crosby would help write some of the songs in harmony, he really wasn't the singer, and I think the one we chose is about the closest you get to what a being a Crosby song was, So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star. That was pretty much him. As far as the main writer of it.
Yeah. The only two he wrote and sung a lot of lead would be Only a Rock and Roll Star and Renaissance Fair. So basically for the birds, and maybe I could have been a situation with him with the birds. We don't know.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, a band surviving at all is pretty miraculous, because bands are, you have a bunch of different dynamics, you know, you have different artists, and I always, you know, like I'll get to know a band, then they'll break up, and that's like, it happens a lot. So when bands stay together, there is a dynamic, even though, like, they might not stay together a long time, but these guys definitely stayed together long enough to put out some unbelievable music and make a big, you know, impression in the rock and roll history. But let's play that. Let's play So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star. Then we'll come back and we'll do part two of Stump the Timmins Brothers. Okay. Anything you want to say about this song before we play it, guys?
I'll let John introduce it.
You know, that Crosby is not given credit for helping to write it, but I've heard him say in an interview that really it's called the rift between him and McGuinn. McGuinn wasn't about to give him credit, so instead he said it was Chris Hillman helping co-write it. But, but you know, so you get
only
some friction there, you know.
Yep.
And here was Crosby saying, you know, in that Crosby voice that, you know, he can say all he want, but I was the one who was with him when we were writing this song. And so
I don't care what Roger Fon is what he said, too.
So pick the one you want to believe. One of them's got to be right anyway. I don't know if it's McGuinn or Crosby, but regardless, it's quite an interesting song that you can make a case of what 16, 15 years later when it was Foreigner did – you know, a song that was comparable with Jukebox Hero with the same concept, So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star. And you always wonder, what was there any connection there when they were writing that, where they sort of had this kind of a subtle influence, thinking, yeah, when they were growing up, they heard this song about the birds.
Oh, that'd be a good question.
You know,
I know, yeah. Tom Petty loves this song. Tom Petty does this live in concert a lot. So that's how well he likes a rock and roll star. Yeah.
Well, we'll be right back with John and David Timmons right after this song, so stick around. I'm on a carousel with John and David Timmons, and we're talking about the roots and branches of the rock and roll family tree. And tonight we're out on a limb with Buffalo Springfield, the Byrds, and we're going to be getting out there with Bad Company here in just a minute or two. But what is there anything, guys, we want to wrap up or talk about with
Crosby
and all those
song,
guys?
When you talk about Carousel and listen to that song, you can hear that the Hollies harmony, so how they harmonized. It was always amazing to me how they could all harmonize. And boy, you would see Graham Nash's influence, what he would do with CSNY the same way on that, too. And when you hear Carousel, and I always, time I hear Carousel, I always think of, since it's the anniversary of the British invasion, when you hear that song, it really goes with that time period.
Oh, I love the sound of the Hollies, and I think that it's one of those bands that kind of there's definitely that three-part harmony, and I just wonder how they, maybe you guys would know, how did they do after Graham Nash left? I mean, were they able to get somebody else in the band to pick up that lead singer, that harmonizing songwriting piece? I know Alan Clark, I think, was still in the band, but how did they keep going? And I think they're still touring, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Well, they brought in a member called Chris Goldman. He would later form 10cc. They brought him in, and he was one of the backers when they made the famous song "Long Cool Woman in a Black Dress." After they had made that, he would leave the band and form 10cc with a couple others. So,
I'm a big 10cc fan. Yeah, I love 10cc.
Oh, they were good. One of my favorite all-time songs is "Rubber Bullets." I love that song. It's a good one. Everything. Well, I'll let John say what he thought, but that's who they brought in.
Well, I know that not too much longer after Graham Nash left, Alan Clark would get frustrated with the band too and would leave. But here's the strange part about it: he would come back because they'd already recorded an album with him. And it started having a lot of success, namely with the song "Long Cool Woman." And he was really away from the band, and I think they had to get a producer to convince him to come back to the band so they could tour with it, because the singer they was doing the song just wasn't working out as well as Alan Clark did. And
that's a good point.
So that's when they kind of took off again, and they had several hits in the early 70s there.
"Long Dark Road" was another one they charted with, and like I said, but I think though after Graham Nash left though, you could see the sound had changed quite a bit. When you were listening to "Long Cool Woman" and you listen to "The Long Dark Road," they kind of went a different direction, I think, basically.
Or even "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother."
Yeah, they kind of went more to that time of song there. I've used that "He Ain't Heavy" myself, and even when I'm in church service, I've used that song before. So that song is so good song to use. It's so and that was all made what I call after Graham Nash. So they still held their own.
Yeah, absolutely. They did. When you guys are singing those songs, those are really good songs. Yeah, and I think sometimes you think about, you know, what happened to them and where they are, and I think they're out there. I'm pretty sure at least a year or so ago I saw that they do tour. I think it's in Europe, but I'm not sure who's still with them. I could probably look that up, but I think it's time for part two of the Stump the Timmons Brothers. And if I had a drum roll, I would use it. I don't. Okay, so these are some people that we're going to talk about. Stephen Stills for a minute. This should be pretty easy, but it might not be. But you never know. So Stephen Stills, we know, auditioned for Marcy's favorite band, the Monkees.
I knew they would come up.
Yeah. I know these Monkees would come up somewhere.
Yeah. And Stephen Stills had a history with one of the Monkees before he auditioned. Do you remember who that would be? And, second part, what the name of their band was?
Ooh.
Stephen Stills was friends with one of the monkeys before his, before there was a monkeys. One of the people that made it.
I believe the friendship was with Peter Tork.
That's part one.
Yes, him, Peter Tork, they was together.
Good job, David.
And but I'm trying to think of the song.
Well, it's the name of their band. Yeah, they did have a name.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's kind of connects into what happened down the road for Mr. Stills.
Buffalo Springfield would happen.
Yep, and you're close.
Okay, was it like, okay, I'm going to really go on a limb since that's the key word tonight.
I know they play like maybe with the Springfield rifle.
No,
no.
Okay. I want to say they played on the Sunset Strip. Boy, I got it on the tip of my tongue. It has something to do with a buffalo. I'm almost positive, right?
Yep. Yes.
Oh, I got this so much. Would have been connected with. Man, it's driving me up the wall now.
I can see the smoke coming out of David's ears right now.
Yes. I get some connect. Was it called the Buffalo Horn Band?
Nope.
I am impressed that he knew it was Peter Tork, because I'm not. I'll be honest. I don't think I would have. I would have gotten that. I'm like,
they were songwriting friends in Greenwich Village,
yeah,
in New York.
Yes. That's where they met. Boy, but I am drawing a blank on the band.
They actually had a group. Yeah, they actually had a band. Wasn't around a long time, but they were both in this band, and that band's name influenced Buffalo Springfield, like you guys said. Influenced the name.
What to do with a steamroller? Because Buffalo Springfield name came from a steamroller.
Yep, that's true, but this was different.
Okay. Well, I'm getting all around this. I'm trying to hit it.
You can go into round three because you got the first part. But if you want me to tell you, I'll tell you. If you want to wait later, I'll tell you later. It's up to you guys.
I got to hear this, John. Since we get to go to tier three anyway, since I got torqued. So I want to hear.
Yeah, you got to. It's Buffalo Fish.
Yes. Once you told
I would not
me,
have gotten
I don't
that.
Know where I got buffalo horn, but I know.
What?
Oh.
You got the word buffalo, so you were dancing around it.
I tell you, you got Peter Tork, so that's good. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We do. The tension is building because we're entering into round three. But we're
moving up there.
You guys are. And so is there anything else you want to talk about with the Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the Byrds, the Buffalo Springfield, that branch? Are we ready to jump over to another branch, or are we good with this one?
If John is, I'm ready to go to the Bad Company, but I'll see what John has here.
Before we close the book, and since you did mention the monkeys, and we just heard a little while ago, "So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star" by the Byrds. If you look, when that came out, it was January of 67. And who had just came on the scene on NBC TV in September of 66 and was selling records like crazy in their weekly NBC TV show, none other than the Monkees. And supposedly that's what the Byrds were making. They were looking through teen magazines, and it's like, gosh, anybody can become a rock and roll star. It seems like now it's so prefabricated.
The Banana Splits became a household name, basically, along with the Monkees, Drooper, Snooper, and Snork.
That's right. And them as well. And I think, you know, the lyrics there, you kind of sense a little bit of like, you know, are some of these people even talented that, and I'm not saying the Monkees, but some of them they were looking at in magazines, and yet, you know, it's like everybody and his brother is wanting to become a rock and roll star.
And they still are. So,
yeah, it hasn't changed.
They stay in the limelight. They definitely do on that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they do. They do.
It's still a very popular vocation.
But like I give Davy Jones credit. I got to give the late Davy Jones credit for one thing before we get off on the Monkees. He did bring us David Bowie. because Bowie said, I got to change my name because I don't want us to be Davy Jones. So we'll change it on that.
Yeah, and he sang on the Ed Sullivan Show the night the Beatles sang.
Yes.
A lot of people don't know that. You're exactly right. And wasn't as a member of the Monkees either.
No, he wasn't.
He was Oliver, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Oliver play, yeah.
That's another Marcy. Marcy's listening, and that's another one of her favorite songs, and she loves Davy Jones. I don't know if she's heard him sing that Oliver song where, you know, he's like the little poor guy, you know,
right.
And he's on the street. And, oh, yeah, I remember watching that, and I remember waiting, thinking, who is this guy?
Well, John, if Marcy listening, I will do this one. Just because I'm short, you know, they always tell him that, you know, because, and I think that was on Daydream Believer.
Where'd he go? What take is this? 7A.
Yeah.
The song, she is typing it in, Where is Love is the song that he sang.
It's a
good one. It's really good. Yeah. And it's actually shows that, you know, these guys were talented. I mean, Peter Tork was a musician.
Yeah. And Michael Nesmith. Oh, definitely.
And I think all of them, you know, learned a lot from that, you know. Although I still like watching the show. I watch the show to this day. It's like, it's still funny.
Well,
it makes me laugh.
It reminds me of Hard Day's Night. Basically, it's a copy of what the Beatles did of Hard Day's Night, basically, how they run around.
Yeah.
But the one thing I know, but like I said, but I know I got to see Marcy once in a while, so I'm going to get off the Monkees.
Yeah. She doesn't forget things, I can tell you that.
I know that.
Hell yeah. We know that. So we have to say nice things. And she is saying here that both me and Michael Nesmith and Davy Jones were born on the same day.
Wow.
Wow. What do you think of that?
That's interesting.
That's like
that
the stars are all lined up there. That's pretty cool. But
Davy Jones and Michael Nesmith.
Not me, but Marcy.
Oh, Marcy was born the same day. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. There we go. Like I said, there.
Interesting.
Tell her I'll give her an autographed picture of Monkey Headquarters Man.
Oh, she loves that. She's got a really cool postcard she got from when she was in the Monkees. Fan club. Has she ever shown you that? Oh yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Nice.
But that's pretty cool. But let's jump over to another branch. We got a half an hour left and we have a whole branch to go over. Now our second branch is Bad Company.
Good band.
A very good band. Came in kind of a little later on and had a lot of things going on, so let's talk about them and their offshoots and their roots. Roots and offshoots.
I want to bring this up right off the bat about Mata Hoople. Paul Rodgers at that time was working for Allen Records. Mata Hoople was at the same, it was called Olympia Studios. They were playing. Mata Hoople had just put out their first two albums. Ian Hunter brought up the idea. They heard Paul Rodgers sing. Paul Rodgers was that time, he was with Free, and he was recording stuff in Allen Studios. Ian Hunter brought up the comment, why don't you join Mata Hoople, become the lead singer, and I will be on the songwriting team. And I read this in Ian Hunter's book. And you always think, what if? What if had Paul Rodgers had joined Mata Hoople, Would it clicked with their songwriting ability? But Ian Hunter was willing to go second fiddle to Paul Rodgers as the lead singer.
Wow,
so
I didn't know that.
Interesting. It was very interesting. And then Paul Rodgers had another opportunity to join the Doors right after Jim Morrison passed away. A good friend of John Nice told us this. And they went over to England. I believe Krieger did. Am I right on that, John? Was it Krieger went to England to talk to him?
Robbie Krieger and Ray Manzarek both did.
And they wanted Paul Rodgers to take over the Doors. And Paul Rodgers was flattered by it, but he did not want to join a band that was already well-known for what their sound was, the way the Doors were. And I'll let John tell a little bit about more, but this is amazing how he almost became lead singer of the Doors.
Well, it was 1971, of course, when Jim Morrison passed away. So happened, that was the time when Paul Rogers was no longer the band Free. They had broken up. He had not quite yet formed Bad Company, so he could have been available. But way it has it, now this story didn't come out until like two or three years ago, because it came during, there was a show, I was talking with Paul Rogers, and he brought up, he said, an interesting thing I just found out. He said that I heard from Robbie Krieger say in an interview that we actually wanted Paul Rogers to be our singer, but at that time, Paul Rogers, to get away from everything, went on a retreat and was out in some rural area in England. They had no way of reaching him or locating him to even ask him this, so they eventually gave up, and Manzarek tried to be the singer of the Doors for a short while there. And so you don't know. If they would have found him and asked him, according to the interview, the response from Paul Rogers was that, I don't know how I would have answered, but I, as Dave just indicated, would rather be forming a band than go into a band that was established. But he said, who knows, if they would have caught me at the time, how would I have responded? But that's an interesting thought.
You always wonder what the sound of the Doors would have been, too. Just like I thought, if he became the Mott Hoople's lead singer, the same way with Doors, would he took them to a new direction, which he probably would have, or would they it's one of them what-if things we always will think of, but there you have which I think would have been such. I think he could have done Jim Morrison's part, too.
Yeah, and this one of those things where it doesn't, in my head, guys, doesn't match. I like mm-hmm. his vocals, but I don't think it would match the. It would be. Think about it. You know, everybody looks at Jim Morrison as the Doors, so you're going to come in and try to be him. I mean, that would be a pretty hard gig.
It would have, hey John. And one thing I'll bring up too. Yet then Paul Rogers, though, he did step up with Queen, though, and whoever thought he could fill Freddie Mercury's shoes, because nobody really could have Freddie Mercury's. He had such an operatic voice, but yet he stepped in with Queen, and it's amazing to me how he's not afraid of the challenges, which to me would be a very hard to do, to step in front. You're talking about well-known bands and stuff and be the front man, which I think would have been difficult.
Oh, I agree. And David, there's another connection between Bad Company and Mott the Hoople. What's that?
Mick Rouse.
There you go.
Mick Rouse, probably one of the best guitar players. And I can tell you how Mick Rouse left. You already know the story how Mick Rouse left. They was making the song Violence. They was in the studio. Hunter, Oberon Watts, and Mick Rouse. And Vernon Gray told about this story. He said Buffin had just walked out of the studio, and he's working on Violence. Well, Ian Hunter thought he should come in at the guitar at a certain time. Well, he didn't. And when you heard the song, I got on an import version, and when he says, take your coat off, they're actually getting ready to get into a fist fight. And you'll hear this in the Violence song. He says, go ahead, take your coat off. Take it off. I'll fight you. But he always said, but Mick Rouse, then again, I think Mick Rouse was the nucleus, though, that Ian Hunter needed, like we talked about Neil Young and Stephen Stills. You need that guy to drive you to be that songwriter. Just like I always kid John about Razor's Edge, when we used to record songs and do songs, John would drive me up the wall retaking songs over and over, and I see where you need that guy to do that. And that's what caused the song Violence, and I believe it's on the All the Way to Memphis album. And you'll hear this, and I think you can get it on the. I know it's on the import reset. You can still. They never cut it off, the Soundman Man, where they get into a fight in that song. Would you being a Mott fan, you know the song well.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we'll have no violence on John Talk Radio. There'll be none. We can't have any. We're a peaceful, loving team.
All we need is love.
All we need is love. Love, love, love. So we're out on the branch, and we've got Simon Kirk. We haven't talked about him much.
Oh, exactly. I'll let John talk a little bit about Simon Kirk, to me, is one of the best drummers. He got his development with Free, and the moment Paul Rodgers was ready to form Bad Company, he wanted to bring him over because one of the best drum songs I know is Fire and Water that they had made with Free and everything. But I'll let John give a take on Simon, too, where...
Simon Kirk, he goes, like you said, with the branch. He was a member of Free and became a member of Bad Company. And, you know, between him and Paul Rodgers, they kind of exemplify what we're talking about tonight, how they can have their, as far as the versatility, the transition to working with different artists. And, you know, it's throughout the era. In fact, If I'm correct on this, I think Simon Kirk off and on has been a member of the Ringo and his All-Star band.
I saw.
Yes, he has.
Marcy and I went. We stood there and stared at him. I mean, it just wasn't him. We were staring at all of them. But Simon Kirk was drumming right with Ringo. That was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
And well, that would be. Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, who do you think played bass that night? Jack Bruce. Who do you think played guitar?
Wow.
Todd Rundgren. Who do you think played organ? Gary Booker. Isn't that his name for Purple Hair?
Yeah, what a lineup.
I'm telling you, that was a dream
now,
lineup.
Now, did Peter Frampton tour with them for a while, too? I've seen him on that show. That's what I thought. I know Frampton's getting ready to tour with Bowie this summer, and that's what I was wondering.
I'd like to see Bowie. But we've got... What I want to do now is I want to play a couple songs. We'll play Free, and then we'll play Bad Company. And then we'll come back, and then we'll do part three of the Extravaganza, Stump the Timmons Brothers, part three. And then we'll walk on the branch a little bit and wrap things up. But Free is one of those bands that I think of when you hear them, it just, you know exactly who it is.
Exactly,
and it's got that guitar sound, that power chord. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah, to me, Free was made for FM radio before FM radio was big. They were duplicating, and you're right, John. When you hear them power chords, when they played them, I tell you, they would take off. Because like I said, when Paul Kossoff would take off on lead guitar, you could tell it had that sound to it, just like All Right Now, one of the catchier songs. I'll let John take his take on it.
You said it all, Dave. I okay. I'll just let John take it from here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be right back. get enough of your love. Bad Company. Well, I'm on with the Timmons brothers, John and David. We've been talking about the roots and branches of the rock and roll family tree. We've jumped over from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Buffalo Springfield. We've jumped over the from one branch to the Bad Company branch. And that's a good branch. But before we get into the final stretch, this is a tough one, guys, and I don't expect you to know the answer unless I give you a really good hint, and I'm going to. Yeah, and this hint will be a good one. Okay, so then we're going back to the Hollies because I don't know why, but anyway, when the Hollies first formed, Alan Clark and Graham Nash were a duo, and they were trying to be the Everly Brothers. And they were called Ricky and Dane Young. No one would know this, so don't worry about that. But I doubt if Adam Clark and Graham Nash even know that. But then they decided to hook up with these guys that ran a band called the Four Tones. And these guys were later on to be the Hollies. And it was Eric Haydock and Dan Rathbone and Vic Steele. So they got together, and they played their first gig together as a combination of the Rick and Dane Young group and the Four Tones, and they came together for the very first night as the Hollies. Now, they played in Manchester, England, and what I need is what is the name of the club. Now, no one would know that unless I gave them a really good hint. So we want the name of the club that the Hollies first played at the very first gig they played. And it was in Manchester, England, and there was a band from Manchester, England, down the road that has the same name as this club.
From Manchester.
From Manchester.
Here.
I can... The wheels are turning.
We're both thinking here.
So you have to think of a band from Manchester that had the same name as this. And this band from Manchester became very big, really big. And when you need another hint, I'll give you another hint.
Can you give me one more hint?
Yes. This band became huge in the 90s.
In the 90s. Okay, well, that's different. Okay, because my mind was clicking on the 60s. Okay.
Would it be...
A band that came big in the 90s. Would they have brothers in the band that would argue with each other?
Brothers.
They would, yes.
Oasis.
You got it. Ding, 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 ding.
Oasis.
Good hint, Don.
Liam Gallagher. I wouldn't have gone out that other hint. That Oasis. Yes. The Gallagher, Liam and his brother never could get along.
Oh, my gosh.
Good question, John.
That was the name of the club, Oasis Club.
The Oasis Club. And it's like I think I went above
and beyond.
Yeah, with the Timmons brothers. Questions today with songs with Rick James. We really did put my two brain cells to the test today. But guys, we got about 7 minutes left. So where do we want to go with? I know Bad Company is a band that gets a lot of airplay. Free does, you know, like you said, David. There's a couple of songs that people play and know of them. Paul Rogers' vocals. Do you guys think there's any similarities between Paul Rogers' vocals and Steve Marriott any? I mean, I was thinking that when I was listening to it.
Well, if you hear Humble Pie, there's a lot of similarities I have to agree with, especially, of course, in Humble Pie, you had the, basically like Free did, you had the Peter Frampton riffs with Steve Marriott's voice. I would agree with that. I would see what John has to say.
Now, Steve Marriott, was he with... I know Humble Pie, but was he also with another band too? I think I was thinking he was with the Faces, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I can see the similarities. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I love that soulful sound, you know. And I was thinking Steve Marriott had that unbelievable type voice, and to this day, I don't know how they do that. I mean, when Marcy and I went last week to see Eric Burdon, and Eric Burdon's 72 years old. And he got out there and just wailed the blues, guys. I mean, it was unreal. And I'm thinking, how do these guys do this physically? You know, it's not good for your voice, but yeah. But I don't know if you guys knew this, but Marcy, I don't know if she's still listening. She got us meet and greet with Eric Burden. Did I tell you that?
Wow, that's something.
Really?
Itself.
Yeah. There was
that is
only four people got to go back out of about 500. She talked to Eric. Yeah, she talked to Eric Burden's wife, Mariana, and got us meet and greets with him.
Hey, John, you was talking about something about Ajo and singers. Well, the late Pete Seeger, you know, has passed away, and but he said what kept him young and kept him so Bible was singing and touring. And this man toured until he almost died at 93, 92 years old. And I think he was talking about Eric Burden. I think once you have that into you, I guess Dick Clark said it best, rock and roll music keeps you young, no matter how old you are, or folk or rock or something. And I think that has a lot to do how you'll hear about these artists. Look at Alice Cooper. He will be 69 this summer, still tours and everything. And I think that does have a lot to do with it. I think no matter what, I think you get so emotionally to love the music. John, I think you agree with this too, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, touring is so important to be out with the fans. And if anybody's listening, Eric Burden, sometimes I do this for my students. He was the lead singer of the Animals from the British Invasion. Here he is still outperforming. I mean, it just goes to show how they do what they do well. I mean, you hear all them say that. They enjoy playing their music. That's what they do. And for many of them, until the day they die, that's what they'll be doing.
And I agree with that 100%, but what I'm confused on is how that raspy voice, that screaming bluesy voice that Paul Rodgers and Marriott had and Eric Burden had, that how do they do that physically? Because a couple of times.
You know, it's hard, John, I have to agree. It had to be hard on the vocal cords, but one of my favorite Eric Burden songs, though, is The House of the Rising Sun. And it was how he could carry that song. And I've heard other versions of it, but to me, when I hear that, I always identify with Eric Burden and the Animals. That song is so, and like you said, how they can catch the notes. Not all lead singers can do that, but the three you mentioned have that gift.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Cocker's up there too. How's he do it? I have no idea. I'd love to ask him that because
I
know
he does that coming through the. You know how he does? He probably does it coming through the bathroom window.
Yeah, that might be it. But guys, we got about three, probably a little under 3 minutes. How would you like to wrap this up? Yeah,
well, I want to wrap it up by inviting people to follow the Timmons Brothers on timmonsrock.com. As latest of what we're doing, we got some shows coming up in the spring, and we'll have them on there. We're going to unveil a new presentation on Motown, the history of Motown.
I love Motown.
So we are available to do that, and we got a couple of rock and roll trivia shows that have been booked. We got one coming up in late April. We definitely know we have one coming up in late June. So those are in the books, and Dave and I are available by going to timmonsrock.com if you want to book us for high school reunions too.
Come along and see us, and like I said, we have reunions, and like I said, if I get John in the audience, I'll have trivia questions for JD too.
I love to come. They're a lot of fun. So if you can get there because it's a great time. Well, guys, it's been wonderful. We've had a really good time tonight. Covered a lot of ground. I think we can now shimmy down the tree. Be careful when you're doing that because it can hurt. Don't come down too fast because that'll be rough on your thighs. But come down the rock and roll family tree. But we'll get back on it. So just here, in the near future, we'll be back with part two of the roots and branches of rock and roll family tree. So guys, thanks so much.
Glad to be on here, John. Appreciate you.
It's great to have you guys.
John, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for the trivia questions. They were very good tonight, and Hopefully some of the people listening learn something, too, along the way.
Well, that's what it's all about. It's just us just giving and teaching and loving, and that's
yeah,
that's
right.
All that's all we're all about.
As David Crawley says, I hope everybody has a great evening.
Good night, guys. Have a good one.
Good night,
John.
Not unattractive. Turn me on tonight, 'cause I'm a radioactive, radioactive. Well, not a fight, and I'm not your captive. Turn me loose tonight, 'cause I'm a radioactive, radioactive. I want to stay with you. I want to play with you. Don't be